This is the What Matters Most podcast. A 100% listener-supported program. And now, here is your host, Paul Samuel Dolman.
Welcome back to What Matters Most. It is Martin Luther King's birthday as we tape this, one of my great heroes, one of the most inspiring forces of the last 100-plus years. Wow, only 39 years old when he was assassinated. Gone much too soon, but the legacy grows every day. We dedicate this show to him and his beautiful work. And I want to welcome the worldwide audience in. We have a beautiful and timely guest today. He has written a book that I just love, The Art of Human Care. He has done a few other books, and he is deeply involved in making the world a better place. It's an honor to welcome to our family, finally, Dr. Hassan Teta. Thanks for coming on, my brother.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with your audience.
Any thoughts on Dr. King today?
Wow, where can I begin? Just a few moments ago, we were sharing where I was located, and you asked me if I was in Brooklyn, which is where I'm originally from. I joined the Navy over 22 years ago, and just over 10 years ago, I reported for duty in my new duty station, which at the time was the National Naval Medical Center here in Bethesda, Maryland, which is now Walter Reed. And it was on the day of Martin Luther King Day at the time. And so I checked in. The facility was largely empty because of the holiday and the honoring of him. And during that same time, at the time, President Obama was being sworn into office. So it was quite a surreal experience for me checking in to be a brand new cardiothoracic surgeon here at the flagship Naval Hospital, and just down the road, the first African-American president was being sworn in all around the time and sort of in the shadow and legacy of Martin Luther King, obviously memorializing and celebrating his life all at that same time. So for me, a kid from Brooklyn, immigrant parents, checking in as a naval officer to be a heart and lung surgeon at our Navy flagship hospital, and understanding the gravity of that moment, but also all those great shoulders that I was able to stand upon to make this moment possible for me. Yes, could not be lost on me how important this day is. At least for me and for so many others, and because of the legacy and the work that he and so many others did to make many opportunities possible for so many of us. Long way to answer the question, but yeah, it means a lot.
Beautiful answer. And then I was thinking, if it wasn't for Rosa Parks refusing to give up a seat and countless others and many who died, you probably couldn't be where you are. And I know for a fact Obama wouldn't have been in the Oval Office.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's definitely fair to say. No question about that.
It really shows how everything is connected.
Oh, indeed. No question.
What do you make of the moment here in Martin Luther King's Day? You live outside of D.C. My friends do, too. It's become a armed camp. There are more troops in the Capitol than there are in Afghanistan or Iraq or even Syria. We saw a white supremacist mob storm the citadel of democracy. What's your take?
Well, you know, there's so much that could be unpacked with that question, that's for sure. I think, you know, what hasn't been said, you know, perhaps, you know, by many, is that we are living in definitely some unprecedented times, at least for me. I still consider myself fairly young, but old enough to have seen quite a bit of things, and know that, you know, our great country has definitely seen its share of challenges, and I think this may be one of those times for sure. You're right that pointing out the irony of us having more people, you know, guarding our building and symbol of democracy than overseas in conflict is certainly striking and something that should give us all pause to at least reflect upon. But I am also encouraged that, you know, I think that there are a great number of people that that still believe in all the principles and the tenets of freedom and democracy and all of the things that I think many of us hold dear. And I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll prevail despite the challenges.
And speaking of the moment, too, I think we passed 400,000 dead or close to it from COVID. As a medical professional working in the system and the front lines, maybe not an emergency room person, but anybody in medicine right now, I have had many a doctor on the show with this, also researchers. And what's been your experience over the almost the last year? I can't believe it was last March with this pandemic and this terrible virus, both personally and if you want to expand professionally too.
Yeah, Paul, that's a great question. Well, I will say the pandemic has definitely hit close to home for me personally and professionally. Regrettably, earlier in 2020, I lost both a dear aunt and an uncle that were both in New York to the pandemic, to COVID-19. So, you know, certainly personally for me, those are family members that won't be at the dinner table and won't be there to celebrate the milestones in life and the triumphs with us anymore. And ironically, just in February of last year, the same aunt that did pass away was at our dining room table here and you know, just outside of D.C. in Maryland, talking about returning in a few, you know, weeks to months for the celebration of my daughter's graduation from high school, middle school, and entry into high school, and also her confirmation. And we were actually making plans, you know, at that time. Now, I was cautiously optimistic even then, because in February, I knew enough at that time from my professional work in the hospital to know that COVID-19, although had not been declared a pandemic here in the U.S., was certainly catching a lot of momentum and impacting the lives of many throughout the world. And being a student of pandemics and have also studied them and always been fascinated by how they impact society over time, I recognize that, you know, we were probably making plans, but those plans could potentially change, and indeed they did. So personally, it has been definitely challenging and difficult. You talked about this, you know, incredible milestone of individuals that have lost their life. That to me is truly tragic when you think about, you know, who those people are. And what's unfortunate is, I think, in a public psyche, you know, we hear the numbers and we may even see the statistics on the news, but what we can't see are those individual lives, you know, unless you've been personally impacted by it and have lost a brother or a sister or a father or a mother, uncle or aunt, cousin, or just a friend. Those individuals are not here with us. And if you think about, you know, the fact that what pandemics do is that they take lives in a very short period of time, and they take many lives in a short period of time. And when we do return to some semblance of normal and we're able to interact and engage with our social circles, what I believe people are going to find, tragically, is that, you know, so many of their friends and family and associates that they just haven't communicated with, you know, because of the way that we've been locked down, are going to soon realize that, you know, so many people that they had no idea about have actually succumbed. And you'll have conversations which may go sort of like, wow, I didn't know that so-and-so passed away. I can't imagine. How did that happen? I never realized it. And unfortunately, I think that's going to be one of the things that that happens. What I've been telling folks is that, you know, it's only a matter of time, and I fear ultimately all of us are going to be impacted directly or indirectly by COVID-19. Certainly those of us that have been displaced with work and job and school have felt it, but, you know, unfortunately in a more direct way, I think, you know, we'll realize that there are people that were close to us and are close to us that have succumbed to this, and it'll make our own world, our individual world, a little bit different. So it is tragic, and you know, I think it's on us, and it's our job to make their their lives mean something by, you know, carrying on their legacies and celebrating their lives in a meaningful way and being grateful for the time that we still have here to make a difference in someone else's life.
Oh, so well said. And in a bit of irony, I had that call last week. I had not heard from a friend in a few months, which isn't highly unusual. Montanez Wade in Nashville, Tennessee, professor at Tennessee State, longtime friend, 3 decades, called to check on her, and her sister called me back 10 minutes later and said she had passed, and that was it. Didn't feel well, got it, and was gone. And I was just stunned, but it was kind of like, wow. And I'm still processing the fact that I won't ever get to break bread again with a dear friend. Like what you just said, I don't think it's really sunk in because it was done, everything's virtual these days, you know? And kind of, it's like, oh, okay. So suddenly that's these staggering statistics. And I know people that have lost parents and others and stuff like that. And I've lost a couple other people, but that's the closest friend. And it was very similar to what you just described. I have to feel, too, as I have friends around the world and so many people, we've had global guests. To my mind, this is almost the only country this advanced that hasn't had a coordinated federal response, or almost it's just a laissez-faire attitude of indifference. Am I reading the room right?
Well, I think certainly, many people have said that. And, you know, I think regrettably, and I think I've learned this just from, you know, my life experience, the military and academia and just my own work of surgery and dealing sort of on the life of the fringe of life and death, that, you know, there are many things that you can do to lament what happened in the past. But I think to your point, yes, you know, many people have all kinds of opinions on what we could, should and wouldn't do, if you will. But I think what we need to focus on, and, you know, no pun intended, but what matters most is what we're going to do from this point forward. You know, I think crossing this threshold of 400,000, again, just goes back to the fact that these are going to be these lives that have been lost and cut short are going to start impacting a lot of people. And I think that, the society, our society here in America in particular, are going to have to, you know, have individuals take up a lot more responsibility. And I think you're starting to see that. There's definitely been, I think, a conscientious effort by many to adhere to some of the advice of our public health officials with the social distancing and the vigilance with mask wearing and not congregating in crowds. And as inconvenient as it is, I think people are understanding and appreciating that it does make a difference. And then certainly the promise and the hope of the vaccine, I think, you know, lends itself to some semblance of being optimistic that, you know, in time and with some coordination here moving forward with logistics and just planning, we'll get a great number of people vaccinated so that there will be, you know, this bit of insurance for all of us. So I think that's what we probably need to focus on, you know, primarily. I will share with you a bit of a vignette. I think certainly in the spring of 2020 and then after losing, dear aunt, as I mentioned, and uncle soon after that, and having so many friends and family suffering in New York, and doctor colleagues of mine that were from New York where I trained, suffering daily on a daily basis with the case and the volume load and sort of suffering that they were seeing within the hospital and the death of so many of their patients, I found myself in a bit of a funk and working virtually and going to the hospital, but, you know, doing it intermittently, it became very easy to get into a state of an abyss, if you will. And I think a lot of people were there, and I had to get myself out of that. And what it took really for me was a realization that if I wasn't going to change courses here, I could be, you know, heading into a pretty bad place, physically, mentally, emotionally, and so forth. And I started to develop some routines and some habit and sort of go back to some things that were normal, even if it was just getting up every morning and just having, you know, hygiene and changing out of you know, sweatpants and stuff into some other clothes, even if I were going to be staying home all day and starting to, you know, exercise again and have a routine. What that did for me is I think it sort of clarified for me that, you know, still being among the living and being grateful for having health and wanting to preserve that required a sense of optimism and some hope. And then I started to think about how could I help others, not only with telling the story of how impactful it was to make this routine and this adjustment in my life for me, but I started to think about how I could share that story with others. I had great plans for The Art of Human Care, my book in 2020. We had a great grandiose book tour planned, and obviously all that was cut short with the pandemic. But I started to find stories and inspiration in people that I was talking to and corresponding with, and it engendered in me this desire to create yet another book, and I call it The Art of Human Care for COVID-19. And it was a work of and a labor of love over the last few months, and it'll be soon out for folks to appreciate and hopefully gain some inspiration and help from in the coming months.
Will you talk a little bit about this Art of Human Care? How can we apply it now? We've laid out some of our challenges, and I'm with you. I'm starting to fight off the funk myself as we close in on a year and just trying not to fall into a bit of the abyss, shaving for no reason right now and showering and putting on new clothes for my, you know, to go or taking a walk, a little more dressed up. It's like, otherwise, I feel like I've begun to go feral. You know, they're going to find me like Tom Hanks in Castaway out in the island talking to a volleyball.
Right. Well, sure. I mean, think about the isolation, despair, loneliness that so many people are probably feeling now and will continue to feel for the, you know, time ahead, at least for the, you know, sort of near future here. Well, you know, all of those things, I think, are a part of our human condition that we're sharing in common here for good or for bad. But you're right. All of those things that you just outlined were things I was experiencing. And you know, The Art of Human Care was developed over a number of years that were sort of inspired, informed, sort of engendered from a near-death experience that I had when I was an undergrad. Before I became a doctor, and then, you know, my experience as a heart and lung transplant surgeon, sort of working on the fringe of life and death all the time with donors that tragically die and then, you know, recipients that get this miracle of life, sort of forced me to think of a framework that would be easy to characterize all of this, you know, great wisdom that I had from all of these experiences, and more importantly, convey a way of, you know, people that are in healthcare, or quite frankly, anyone that is charged with being a human on this in this world, and someone that cares about others, to put it to practice. And what I came up with were these principles that I kind of call the Art of Human Care, and there are three main elements of that. There are purpose, personalization, and partnership. And so, Paul, when I was in the midst of my despair and sort of this abyss, as I was telling you about, I recognized that, yeah, I had friends and family that had passed away. I had friends and family that were suffering. But I immediately recognized, much like I did when I almost passed away, that, you know, I survived it. And so far I am surviving, and I was healthy. And because of that, I needed to, you know, live my purpose. And in my mind, my purpose was to heal and to help inspire others to you know, work toward health. And so I rediscovered a purpose, if you will, during this time. And I think that's really important, right? That if you have a purpose, you're going to get up and you're going to shave, you're going to hygiene, you're going to do all those things. You're going to go to a job. You know, if you have a job and that's your purpose, if you're a parent, you got to wake up to make sure the kids are going to eat and get off to school, that's going to be your purpose. Now, COVID threw a monkey wrench in everyone's kind of purpose to some extent, but I would argue that we all sort of rediscovered, you know, the way that we could still be effective and hopefully and still make a difference. And so that was really where that came from. And the personalization part is a very interesting principle, but I recognize in healthcare that we always have to personalize our treatment and our therapy plans to that individual. What may work for one may not always work for another. I recognize that when I was able to overcome my challenge of being in the hospital and almost dying, that the great care providers that provided care for me personalized their treatment plan for what I needed to get me better. And then finally, I recognize that, you know, during that time and what I see every day in my world of healthcare, that getting someone from a place of illness, sickness, or trauma and getting them to, you know, be healthy again and be productive again takes a great partnership. It takes the partnership of the patient. It takes doctors. It takes nurses. It takes allied health professionals, physical therapists, rehab, behavioral health professionals. I've seen that in the military for sure. It takes a lot of people to get, you know, an individual better again and get them back to where they were and ideally even better than where they were before. And so I recognize, hey, those principles of purpose, personalization, partnership, all those things that I was going to spend 2020, you know, espousing and evangelizing, they're absolutely what are all necessary right now, right here in the midst of COVID-19. How could I help people find and rediscover their purpose in the midst of a pandemic? That's a really big challenge, but it's very important. How can you personalize, you know, what's happening to everyone in the midst of a pandemic? Very important. And you know, I think we know now all too well that the only way we're going to get through this pandemic, just like all the other humans have got through pandemics in the past over the ages, is through a partnership, through a shared responsibility of people doing individual things and collectively doing things that are in coordination to sort of get us to a better place.
Like a partnership.
Yeah, we need a partnership to get us to a collectively better place. And, you know, it's going to take the partnership and the coordinated effort of all of us doing all the things that we talked about earlier, the social distancing, the mask wearing, you know, not convening in large crowds for now until we get to, you know, more mass vaccination. But it's also going to take coordination, logistics, and planning to get, you know, a great number of people, a great number of many more people vaccinated. So, you know, what I recognize is that these principles of the art of human care, they could be, again, applied, you know, right now, right here in this state of pandemic, purpose, personalization, and partnership. The very tenets of the art of human care are what's needed, I believe, in this time to help us get through the pandemic and ideally get us to a better place. The one good thing that I like to, you know, hold up as a pearl of optimism is that when you do have the opportunity to study the history of pandemics and how they impacted society and the world, you recognize that at the time they were terrible things, obviously, you know, millions, if not hundreds of thousands of people, you know, dying and succumbing to some virus or bacteria or some sort of plague, all in a very short period of time, you know, absolutely tragic. But they also, if you look at them sort of in sort of through the lens of history, you recognize that they also tend to change societies politically, economically, socially, and technologically. And there are some good things that do emerge out of these experiences. I think it's a testament to how resilient humans are, which is a good thing. And I believe that we'll, again, you know, overcome just like we did in the past, this pandemic, and ideally emerge stronger and more resilient because of it. You know, politically, we've seen all kinds of things happen. Economically, we've seen a lot of things happen. Certainly socially, there's been a lot of challenges this year. But, you know, one could look at one bright spot, and that's through technology. A lot of us were able to still continue working throughout this pandemic time. And that is a testament to the, you know, great technology and the advances that we made over time. I could tell in just healthcare, something that probably would have taken a decade to achieve had we not had the pandemic. It virtually happened in a matter of weeks to months, and that was a more ubiquitous use of telemedicine and the conveniences that it's now conferred on a great number of healthcare providers and more importantly, the patients to be able to get medical attention, quality medical attention, good medical attention in a way that was much more convenient than it had been in the past. And I think this is something that'll endure moving forward. So I think that if we can, you know, sort of collectively, you know, keep in mind those tenets of purpose, personalization, and partnership, but also be optimistic about, you know, some of the good things that may emerge out of this. You know, certainly the memories of those many people that have passed away need to be honored and celebrated. But we should also look to some of the things that have happened during this time that hopefully will continue to benefit society.
That is such a magnificent answer. Thank you. And I'm hearing you and I'm smiling because not about the subject matter, but about the structure. You are acknowledging the suffering, but through it all, you're finding the positive, moving through it, and also looking to make a positive difference. I can't count how many times that I've seen this in people that are successful, both by society standpoints and within their inner game. And I'd like to throw myself in there to a lesser degree, not as accomplished, but I do just generally see the positive. And while I will cry when I bang my knee and even curse or whatever, I tend to try to figure out what's good about it, and it's made for a better life. So that is universal, right? Anybody listening anywhere in the world. We have people that listen in Africa. Maybe they're in Ghana today because that's where your family's from. You can take it and turn it into a positive while not trying to bypass what is painful, because that's dangerous. And one of the great elements I heard woven through all of that and I'm seeing in your life is giving back, rising above oneself, service. It's selfish. It feels amazing. I mean, Martin Luther King is on the poster. The guy was willing to die for it and was free because he wasn't afraid to die. Isn't this, these are like key elements that anybody, anywhere, of any means, can have a beautiful and meaningful life defined by their own terms.
Absolutely, indeed. You know, you mentioned service on this day. You know, this is, I think, one of the great principles that's been advanced over the last, you know, few years in the celebration of Dr. King's life is to not make it just be a day of a holiday where, oh, you know, I get to sleep in today. I don't have to go to work. I could, you know, I could just kick back and relax, maybe watch some movies. But instead, you know, have it be for all a time to remember his life and celebrate that great work that he did while he was here with us. But more importantly, kind of be introspective and think about how can I, you know, emulate his example and provide service to others. And I think, you know, you eloquently put it out that when you do serve others and you know, you do it in an unselfish way and you do it in a genuine way, it invariably will, you know, bring you advantage and great reward in a way that you don't expect it. And it's been, you know, something that has definitely been true in my life. I know just the actual experience of being a naval officer for so many years and, you know, kind of embodies and epitomizes service for anybody that's in the military. And at once, you know, very difficult to sort of make that decision to go into the service and thought I was just going to do it for a few years. And now it's been a career. It has been an incredibly rewarding experience, one that's so hard to sort of characterize in any short period of time by even just telling a few stories. But just over my entire career, I've been able to do things and be a part of something, you know, pretty, really great, and made great friends in the process, and it's all because of this sort of, you know, service and this being a part of something bigger, and I think that's the same experience I think, you know, many people have that have had that, you know, experience, whether it be in the military, it be in church, whether it be with a nonprofit, whether it just be as a volunteer, even on an afternoon or you know, over a summer or you know, in some sort of program, they find that those those experiences become some of the most rewarding and pivotal times in their lives. And I think that's a great way to honor, you know, Dr. King on this day. But it's also a great way to sort of pursue your life if you look for those opportunities to provide service in some way. You know, what you're doing here by giving a platform for folks to share their stories is a great service as well. And I think, you know, people can be inspired by hearing these stories and maybe finding some pearl or nugget or wisdom for what matters most in their life. I think that is a great service. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. And you've accomplished a ton. Have you been able to also find the Holy Grail of peace and a sense of deep contentment as you move through the world?
Wow, that's a great question. Well, I don't know if I've found the Holy Grail. I think that's one of those never-ending pursuits. at least I'd like to think so. It keeps you alive, it keeps you young, keeps you hungry, and keeps you moving forward. But what I have been able to attempt to achieve is some inner peace, and that has come by way for me in many ways of spending time with family, of course, reading, writing, running, all those things that sort of help me on a day-to-day basis. But one that's very central to all of that is the practice of meditation, which I discovered after my deployment, particularly challenging deployment. One of my deployments after coming back from Afghanistan at that time was really hard to transition back into the real world. And I, through serendipity, faith, and fate, I should say, and maybe divine intervention, I discovered meditation. And it's been a daily practice that has definitely helped quite a bit over the years.
You beat me to the question, because I was going to ask if you had a meditation or mindfulness practice. So I guess you do enough to even be intuitive. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, it's been what a great tool for me anyway, to help in so many ways and help keep things in perspective, but also I think, help provide an inner peace and some inner zen. when things around me are not so zen.
I would hate to try to move through the world now. I lived for years without that awareness, and I was not as happy a person or peaceful. The ego is a restless beast that's never satisfied. I know you served in the Navy, you were a surgeon, you were in Afghanistan. I know you're in the medical field, but for heaven's sakes, why are we over there? Why are we always in all these wars? I mean, it's so completely imperial, and I know you probably don't want to be a controversial sort of cat, but I mean, we've been over there forever, and it's just been trillions of dollars. Wouldn't that money have been better spent here trying to create the art of human care as a sort of core doctrine for our people?
Well, again, another really good question, and I guess I don't really have a compelling answer for you other to say, again, being a student of the world and avid reader of history, it just seems to be part of our human condition. you choose the era, you choose the period, you choose the empire. There's always conflict in the world somewhere. We're living in our modern, era and period now. And I would imagine that, at the time of Pericles and others, that they were probably philosophers lamenting and asking the same questions in their own way, probably not over a podcast, but maybe over a fire pit or something, and saying, why are we still fighting in that far off land somewhere? And the elders probably, had some opinion on it, but it just seems to be the human condition. I think that regrettably, we do have conflict in the world, and there seems to be this inextricable link between humans and conflict. Sometimes it's necessary, sometimes it may not appear to be necessary. So I don't have a compelling answer or one that will placate while we're over there or why anyone is engaged in any war. All I can say is that I think the more people that become perhaps using the word enlightened is probably too Pollyannish, but if folks you know, take time to put themselves in others' shoes and try and understand others a little bit more, and perhaps, you know, being a little bit selfish, apply principles of the art of human care, I think it will help and serve well to dissipate, you know, conflict. You know, certainly I think that, you know, you being one that has adhered to the principles of mindfulness and meditation, I think you would appreciate and probably concur that if more people meditated, there'd probably be less conflict in the world. I think that would definitely be a prescription, I would say, for what ails a lot of people.
Well said. And you're right. And we've had people on the show like who founded Inner Explore, teaching kids to meditate in schools, and that it does. It changes everything. And I loved your answer, too, because this has been going on forever. I was thinking of Socrates and Aristotle. Some of those poor guys of peace had to take the hemlock. Copernicus had the gall to say the sun revolved, you know, is the center of the universe. They killed him. Seems to be a ton. There's always a war. I read this great book. One of the things about the pandemic, got to read a ton. Read all about the Roman Empire. If it's just one war after another. Oh my God. That's history. What was James Joyce said, history was a nightmare he was trying to awaken from. So good answer, though, by you. There was a sort of a broad picture there. What matters most to you? I don't always ask that question, even though it's the title of the show. I know you're a father. What matters most for you? Is just be curious, since you brought those words up a few times.
Yeah, well, I will say, I over the years, I've had great opportunities and these awesome invitations to speak to a great number of audiences. I've been able to share the writings that I have, the teachings that I, you know, have with, you know, whether it be students in medicine or audiences that are just interested in the work that I've done in my books. Yeah, that question kind of comes up in various ways. And why I bring up all of those different events is because, you know, folks used to say, well, how would you like to be introduced? You're a naval officer, you are a surgeon, you're a heart and lung transplant surgeon, you're an author, and all of those things. And over time, I started to recognize that those things were not really. They're somewhat important, but they didn't seem to matter the most. And so I started to simply say, I only want to be introduced in three ways. And that was, just simply say my name and say he's a husband, he's a father, and he's a surgeon. And how did I come to that? And I think it comes down to the central, you know, theme of your question, what matters most. And so those were the three things that seemed to matter the most to me, being a husband, being a father to my son and my daughter, and being a surgeon, because it's the instrument and the sort of vehicle by which I can, you know, help folks in this world by being a doctor and a surgeon. And those seem to be the things that matter most. And I think it's a bit of age and probably life experience that is also conveyed to me, particularly the constant reminder in my work of transplant, where I see young people tragically taken on a pretty regular basis by trauma, by suicide, by some unfortunate accident, devastating things like a stroke or something like that, and then puts them in a position to become an organ donor. Each one of those cases, just when I thought I've slowed or heard the words, I'll hear or see another one, and I'm like, oh my gosh, all of those things have given me gratitude for appreciating what I have and recognizing that the things that matter most are the things that you appreciate when you can't have them anymore. And you lose a loved one, you'll recognize that, wow, that person was a lot more important to me than my car and my house and my job. And so I think that's how that comes about. So I think that's what matters most, those things.
What an answer. And you had a near-death experience. What are your thoughts on your inevitable mortality at some point, hopefully in the faraway future?
Yeah, hopefully in the faraway future, from your lips to God's ears. Well, I'll tell you, I was just having a conversation about this with someone pretty recently, and I guess because we were probably, you know, thinking about COVID, and you know, I think we had a shared experience about how, you know, someone, again, close to us that we knew, not a family member, but a friend, colleague, passed away from COVID. And we were thinking, oh my gosh, what if that were to happen to us? Like, you know, what if today was your day? Well, I'd like to believe that at any moment, if that moment were to come, unfortunately, sooner than later, that once I'm gone, you know, those that eulogize me or remember me would be like, that guy really was engaged with life. He was living it to the fullest. He was doing things to help others. He was making a difference. He was creating a destiny that provided a legacy for which to be remembered as someone who made a difference during the time he was around on this world. And that would be the way I'd like to be remembered. So obviously that's a work in progress, and it always will be. And you know, I try and stay reminded of that.
Well, you reminded us today. And I'd love to already extend an invitation for a return engagement, perhaps in 2021, where maybe 6 months down the road, we can talk about a lot of the positive things that have happened. I hope to God a subsiding pandemic, maybe a new administration that's helping all kinds of people, especially near the bottom, and also your successes.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. And hopefully all the things that you mentioned coming to fruition and us in a better place. I am confident, though, like I said, you know, being a study and student of these things in the past, humans are pretty resourceful, and we seem to come through these things, hopefully better than we were when we went in.
Before you leave us, do you have any inspiring words? We have a lot of younger people that listen. You were a kid coming out of Brooklyn. Parents were from Ghana and have been able to do so much. A lot of people out there maybe don't have the support, but they have the dream. They have maybe the drive. What would you tell them right now if you were sitting with them one-on-one? Because in a sense, that's what we're doing here. It's just the three of us.
Yeah, good question. Well, I don't like to evoke cliches, but in this case, this cliche turns out to be pretty true. And that would be, don't give up. You know, very simple. Don't give up. Whatever it is that you have an interest or a dream or a passion for, you know, pursue with everything you have, and don't give up. And you know, sometimes we recognize, at least I have over you know, my short life here so far, that it's not always the talented or the most you know, intelligent or the smartest or even the most athletic that tend to, you know, be the ones that ultimately succeed, at least not in a very meaningful way. But it's typically just those that stick around and just persist and have the resilience to never give up and just keep going, that become not only the most successful, but usually those that have an enduring success. So that would be the parting words. Discover what matters most and don't give up.
You've been listening to the What Matters Most podcast, a 100% listener-supported program. If you feel inspired, please go to our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/whatmattersmost and join our family. So until the next time, stay inspired and in the light.